Oh boy, oh boy. Are you recording?
Yes. Stephanie
I don't think I want us to keep doing that because every time she's dead, that makes me sad.
Oh, poor
We're
Adam.
remembering her.
R.I.P. Stephanie Niznik. Welcome to Ever Would, Never Wouldn't, a podcast where I, Adam Lover, make my friends
Eric
and KT
watch and discuss with me now the second season of the hit early 2000s WB teen slash family drama Everwood. Tonight's episode, season two, episode two, Extraordinary. Written by Michael Green, directed by David Petrarca. Original air date, September 22nd, 2003. Official DVD booklet summary. Andy and Harold are excited about college, but their kids may not be. Ephraim wants to skip the SAT to apply to performing arts schools. Amy ignores a Princeton rep, and Bright, whose best hope is an athletic scholarship, is thrown off the football team.
It's true. All true.
This is an episode of Everwood.
Yep.
I think that, this is I'm beginning to see why, like, I tell people, like, I vouch for the first season of Everwood. Like, it is a masterpiece. And I still think that. And I'm not counting out season two yet, but I think there was some weirdness with this episode. And I wasn't entirely satisfied with it.
I think the weirdness is that number one, it's the beginning of the second season, and they're like, what are we doing? And
Like, we
number
have
two,
to address the high schoolers and their college
right.
plans.
And number two, that it was all high school, college stuff that seems very far away for me. Like, I'm like, what is that? What am I
Yeah, that's
watching? Like,
true. That's true. Instead of being the usual recipe of like there are adult
mix.
storylines and then there are teenage storylines, this is like where every like the confluence of all of those storylines where the parents are thinking just about the kids. And yeah, that is a big reason why I think it's weak. I also will have some fun talking about the medical storyline in this episode because
Very weird.
I have some feelings about it. This episode is called Extraordinary. We start out with some Irv narration about every parent thinks their kids are extraordinary. And we open up with a college admissions fair.
Since when is college such an ordeal?
No, you're dealing with college admissions, raw competition. From here on out, parents you once carpooled with are the enemy.
They're just juniors, Harold.
Just juniors. Don't you know anything about getting into college?
I thought I did until you asked me that.
You have no idea, do you? You haven't read the guidebooks, school rankings, talked to guidance counselors, anything at all?
Well, I'm here.
Oh, this is a chance for actual face time with actual admissions officers. Even with a candidate as strong as Amy, that takes preparation. I had her make her priority list weeks ago. Amy?
I'm going to sketch out my game plan.
Only because your son's future hangs in the balance. Pay attention. You've got 2 hours. You're battling a class full of parents. Give 8 minutes per reach school, six for safeties. Pick up a bumper sticker for anything on the West Coast. You need me? I'm with the Ivies.
Hey, I guess I should check this out. Have fun.
It's a fun kind of beginning, a lot of kinetic energy, right? emotion, and Harold's energy is like, whoa, you haven't been planning for this like for the last 2 years, like, which is fun. I enjoyed that.
Yeah,
that was a good cute scene.
I love that Harold had a laser pointer.
To point at his own watch.
Yeah,
and then just at boobs. It's very good.
It was very good. Ephraim and Amy are off on the bleachers, avoiding everything, and Ephraim is like, well, it's the nice thing about my dad is that he's too clueless to become one of the pod parents. He won't realize that that is not quite true.
It'll come flying at him like a Drexel Frisbee.
That was amazing. Oh my God.
Was it Drexel?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It could have been.
I like, if it wasn't, I like that you improvised that Drexel Frisbee.
He threw that so intensely and so perfectly. Mm-hmm. I think I said during it that it was like, oh, I can see Treat Williams playing Frisbee on the Franklin and Marshall college grounds. Mm-hmm. He probably did that a lot because yes, it was way 100%. Perfect. Woo!
Oh, Treat. Of course, Andy, the next morning, is starting to develop an academic strategy for Ephraim, because it's very important to have such a strategy for applying to colleges and all that fun stuff. I don't relate to any of this, because like I applied to two colleges, Millersville University, because I knew like, well, that's where like, if I want to be a teacher, like that's a local school that I could go to be a teacher, which was my plan at the time. And NYU.
Okay.
And I got accepted to both.
Hell yeah.
But Millersville offered like a full tuition scholarship. And one thing I say to this day is like, if I had known how like just normal and ultimately like, in my opinion, and because of my existential whatever and like nihilism, how meaningless it is to just take out student loans and just make it happen. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I would have just gone to NYU.
Hey, but you know what? As somebody who had student loans and literally just this year finished paying them off, I think you were smart.
Yeah, but
college means fucking nothing.
No, but
in
I have all these loans anyway that I ended up having to take out.
Oh, really?
Grad school shit. So it's like,
oh yeah, that's true too. Yeah.
But I'm, of course, obviously, my life would be totally different, and I honestly don't think I would have been like, can you imagine like me like the version of me then that was like a total like turd, undeveloped, like trying to like fucking live in New York City and do like, I can't, it is so weird to think about that. And I remember like an admissions person from NYU like called to talk to me on the phone to like see like what's going on, like are you gonna accept. And I remember like going back into my room like to be away from like everybody and just like kind of getting kind of like emotional, because I was expressing like, yeah, I don't know that I can afford it, like I have a full tuition scholarship at this other school, and I think I was like hoping that like this person would like discuss options with me or something. And I just remember like them being like, just not. It's just like, okay. Like, oh, yeah. What? Anyway.
Make 100 more calls now.
Yeah. Mm. Wild to think about. But yes, that was never.
Yeah. I applied to 3 schools and got into all of them. And then it all seemed like just a random choice to me at the time. I remember thinking that, like going to visit colleges and like looking at all the information about them. Like, it was just like all the same. They all say the same things and they all look the same. They have the brick buildings and the green grass and the kids and the stuff. Like,
I had a weird kind of experience, I guess, because I had to do the process twice, because that was when my father died and I got accepted to like, and I also went to a prep school, which the entirety of the fucking purpose of that school was to prepare kids for college. You had to apply to like at least 5 colleges. I think the first round of colleges, I applied to 12, got into 12. Second round, after my dad died, I decided the college I was going to go to was Bates up in Maine. I was getting a scholarship to go up there and play softball. But then my dad died and I didn't want to move that far away from home. So I reapplied to like 9 other colleges, got into them all, and then decided to go to F&M. But like, it's funny. Like, I remember thinking you were weird that you only applied to 2 colleges, because everyone I knew applied to like at least 5. It was like, because I think like, because it was a prep school, everyone's trying to get in. You always, you had your reach schools, your safety schools, the ones you actually wanted to get into that your parents might not be the, you know what I mean? Like it was a really weird big deal for us.
So you said that your dad died during the like the process of all that. So like,
no. So so my dad got sick. Right. I was literally going to go to college. My dad got sick the summer after I graduated high school and I was going to go to college. Like, I literally had stuff ready to go to college. Then my dad got sick and died. Like, I started working at my former school, like just to have a job while my dad was sick. And then he died like halfway through the school year. And then I just started reapplying to colleges because that was the next step.
Defer or anything.
I did defer, but I didn't want to go far away.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I deferred and then I said, sorry, I'm not going. My dad died and I can't move that far away from my mom.
So was there any like resonance for you? I mean, it's different, but with when Bright's whole thing and people talking about like, well, Colin died, and that's what affected, like,
well, actually, one of the places that I got a full scholarship to was a small college in Pennsylvania, and I don't even know what the fuck its name. I think it started with an M. But my entire essay, literally, I wrote it like the day after my dad died, and the first opening line of it said, "My father died yesterday," and that was my admissions essay. And they were like, "This is amazing. Here's a full scholarship." Wow. And I was like, and I went and visited, and I think I even stayed at that one. And I was like, "No, not, no, thanks," but. Yeah, that was a weird time of my life. And like, seeing this, like, they had these kind of fairs all the time at my school. Like, senior year, they had all kinds of college shit. And then, like, again, I thought you were weird for only doing 2, but then obviously my experience was a weird one.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like people around me applied to more or whatever. Yeah. But I also...
Well, you're kind of like Adam, too. Like, I mean, you're like Adam now. You're like somebody who was always, yeah. Well, yeah, also, you were like super smart.
No, I mean, I don't know.
My favorite college Eric story is that, like, he says that when he was in high school, middle school, and like growing up in the town he grew up in, and he used to be like, oh my God, I can't wait to go to college and go like meet smart people. And then he went to college and then he realized that everyone's fucking dumb. Yep.
Yeah. That's sad. That's a bummer.
Yeah. It is such a bummer.
As dumb as Bright. As dumb as Bright's dad thinks he is.
Yeah.
Let's get back into the episode. There's no Delia storyline in this episode.
No.
I thought that her whole thing with her shirt was going to come back.
Yeah. I thought that was going to be a thing.
Can I wear the shirt today? Well, yeah, I guess. Why? I didn't know if I wore it yesterday. I don't think it matters in fourth grade. I thought there was going to be a whole storyline where, like, she gets made fun of at school for wearing this shirt 2 days in a row.
Right, because I thought that was going to become a thing, the girl from the pool.
Yeah.
Oh, well, what do we got? We got Tom Amandus as Harold doing a little Jimmy Stewart impression.
Aww. Yes.
That's tomorrow at 4:30, Dad.
Oh, well, only afternoon tea with the admissions rep from Princeton. She's looping back up through Everwood on her way to Cheyenne. Anna's stopping to meet with us. Well, meet with you.
Is it okay if I'm not sure that I want to apply there?
Not want to. And miss your chance to walk the same halls as Eugene O'Neill, F. Scott Fitzgerald, Jimmy Stewart, Einstein? Do you know how many Nobel laureates have graduated from Princeton?
Sure, I will by tomorrow.
Which is kind of fun because we've heard them kind of compare Tom Amandus to Jimmy Stewart in the commentary stuff, which is very cool that we get to hear him do that. Harold is, doing his damnedest to pitch Princeton to Amy, including the demographics and the line 8% Latino, followed by a little. It's like, that's
that was so weird.
I love that. It
was so weird. Like, I didn't, like, was he just trying to say that as a statistic to remember? Or was, like, that a, like, a reference to anything? Like,
he's kind of, like, saying, like, hey, it's more diverse than Everwood. Like,
okay.
Cool. Like, and those Latinos.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool to think that Dr. Abbott might actually be like, yay, you want to move to a more diverse area? Because yeah. I didn't think that he necessarily would think that.
Yeah, who knows? But yeah, a Latino. We have a guest star in this episode, none other than Kristen Bell, yep. And 17-year-old Stacy Wilson, who Bright notices while she's doing cheerleading practice. And he only notices her because she has developed a chest over the summer. And when called out on this fact, Bright says, it's not my fault I'm shallow. God made me this way.
It's true.
Which I think that was just an improvised line by Chris Pratt, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
I like how he has a lot of those. Yeah. That were just always like, well, that just applies to Chris Pratt.
Cool. Okay, like, that works.
And later Tom Amandes is screaming at him in the kitchen.
Yeah, that whole thing is like just improvised. Like, they really were a fly on the wall there. Tom Amandes calling Chris Pratt an idiot. Bright finds out that his math grades, I don't know, I just put a sad face. Something
about his math grades weren't.
Math grades, sad face.
It was trigonometry, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, trig sucks. Why couldn't they have, if he's supposed to be so stupid, why couldn't it have been something easier? Like algebra one or something?
Well, because he wouldn't be taking that as his.
Who cares? He's an idiot. Okay, but I kind of thought, honestly, I think earlier it kind of seemed to be that he's this football guy, so he kind of gets away with stuff. But now they're kind of implying, okay, no, it's the no, we're really actually strict. If you fail this class, you don't. Because, you know, it's like all the other sports movies where they set it up where the school helps the really good sports people so they can stay on the team even if they're dumb.
I think the out right here is when the coach says, like, yeah, you just, you know, I can help you with this. We'll just say it's because of Colin. And the show is trying to make Bright a more prominent character, as you can tell, and giving him this moment, this ability, or this opportunity, right, to say, like, no, I don't want to play it that way.
Yeah,
you know, which I like is cool. I guess I'm not sure I quite.
I guess he is an idiot.
I guess he really is an idiot. I'm not sure I fully understand his motivation there. Like, it's pride.
I think it's just guilt.
Guilt.
I think it's guilt.
Because yeah, he still pride. Considers himself responsible for. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, right. Like, there is the whole thing where he's saying that he wants to do it himself. Like, that seems a little pride, but I think it's mostly guilt because that's what he's saying. I don't want to use that. It's like, dude, it also happened. You're not just using it. That's the realistic. Mm-hmm. It's funny to me that they're like, we need Bright to say it with his own mouth. Like, no, come on. You're the school. You could be like, well, this kid fucking went through the process of losing his best friend.
Right. Why couldn't they just kind of be.
Yeah. Be a little more lenient. Like, set, well, help him counselor. Out. Right. It's fucking Scooter.
He's never heard of Colin Hart, even though he was the center of Everwood.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, when told that his math grades mean that he can't play sports, Bright asks, what about football? The counselor says, no football. Bright then says, what about basketball? And the guidance counselor says, no. No basketball either.
What about throwing a basketball at a trophy case?
What if I scream?
Can I do that? Oh, that's accepted.
Yes, that's allowed. You just have to blame it on your grief, though, and then we'll all turn the other way.
I don't want to play it like that.
Let's talk about the medicine storyline here.
Okay.
Because it's all about breast implants.
It is.
Kristen Bell's character has gotten breast implants at the age of 17. I feel really uncomfortable with the way that
Dr. Brown,
Andy,
right from the beginning,
the tone.
He's like, let me say a lot of comments about your boobs and my judgment about your decisions. And like, right, yes, she's underage and it was probably inappropriate, but like, seriously? Well, so
like, right, because like, the like, I get from a medical perspective and like, and like, and from a like, women's beauty standard and like
absolutely
like I think like it's a well-intentioned, you know, attempt on the part of the writers to like push back against something about
But there was definitely like,
but it was clumsily handled.
There's definitely a way to handle that. He could have gone away, like he could have been like, oh wow, you have breast implants, okay, and like then you see him dealing with it later, and then later he's like, let's talk about your options, or like, let's look at this, and then be like, also, are you okay, like why did you make this decision? I'm concerned about your mental health or your home life.
His tone gets so increasingly paternalistic. It's really gross.
Yes, and like, very gross.
And like, again, like I get from a perspective of like, why are we doing like plastic surgery on kids? But then like the other thing I thought of while watching this is I was like, well, how is this kind of complicated by like the angle of like transitioning and like teens who want to transition, and like like the same kind of paternalistic attitude could be taken with kids who are experiencing dysphoria and what, you know, so I don't know.
Did you notice there was a moment, I don't know if it's because I heard it because I'm trans, but there was a moment where he said something that I don't think at the time probably applied to transness, maybe, but maybe it did. He was saying that surgery, plastic surgery, can save lives. Now, my immediate thought was transitioning, he was also taught, he mentioned a specific example. I can't exactly remember what it was. It was
ballots.
Yes, exactly. Right. So he's talking about that, but then he said, but also in other cases, but he said in other cases. So to me, my trans mind wanted to be like, cool, like he, that's a trans thing, I'm just gonna accept it. It's not because it's 2003,
but he also says like, oh, but they're adults.
That's true too. And like, right, like I in this case, this is not a trans woman, this is a young girl,
right,
who's they, again, they, I feel like they're always depicting mothers on this show as fucking morons. Like,
you had implants? I mean, Stacy, you just turned 17. Your body's barely done developing.
I offered to buy her a Jetta for her birthday, but she knew what she wanted.
It's not like everybody doesn't have something done anymore. Demi Moore and like half the cast of Friends. My mom had a peel at the same time. It's totally normal.
This lady was just like, I don't know, she wanted it. And I'm like, and she's your kid.
There were multiple times during, I think it was the first scene in his office, where like, I kept thinking it was something was going to be revealed, like, first one way and then the other. Like, one of them was, like, manipulating the other or whatever. Like,
exactly.
And I kept thinking it was one of them and then the other one.
Yes. I thought so, too. I thought there was going to be a reveal of a really weird, something going on with this family. But in the end, it was just about breast implants.
Revealed.
No,
and it wasn't.
Like, the resolution of the story was just like Andy taking a firm stance. Like, now you wasn't here, young lady.
You're going to get those boobies removed right now. The end.
Like, so, it's just really unfortunate. Stupid. Like, leaning into this weird paternalistic attitude and tone that I think is not a good look.
I don't need to listen to
you. I think you do. And the proof is in those two leaky bags of salt water you had hard pressed into your chest. Sit down. Now look, I don't knock cosmetic surgery. I've seen it save lives. And not just in the cleft palates and the reconstructions, but those were adults who'd had time to think about it. You're a girl who woke up one morning and decided to buy a woman's body. At your age, everybody thinks there's something wrong with the way they look. That's why most surgeons will make you wait until you're at least 18.
Like, waiting another year is going to make a difference. I'm old enough to decide now.
Hey, if your biggest concern when you find out you have to have your implants replaced is that your friends at school are going to find out that you've got them, then you're not old enough to have them. And don't think I just blame you, Stacy. You're not the only one who's at fault here.
I was just giving her what she wanted. I kept thinking about how much better she'd feel about herself. It wasn't supposed to be this complicated.
Well, now it is. By giving in to your daughter, you've consigned her to a lifetime of invasive surgeries. If you're lucky, breast implants are going to give you trouble every now and again, and so far, you're not so lucky. You are 17 years old, Stacy. You're going to be living in that body of yours for a very long time. Why don't you just spend some time in it and see how it makes you feel? And then make any changes that you want. Now, if you will please join us, we can talk about some of our options.
And they tried to justify it by Dr. Abbott being like, hey, you have your own doctoring style. You're an idiot. Like, he didn't say that, but he was like, it's your own style. Find it again. Yeah, like, and I'm like, that's that, the worst style
ever.
The way
ever. That last scene ended with, like, just the two, the females, the girl and the woman sitting there
sitting
just
down,
waiting to hear
coming
what he
back
had to say.
And sitting down.
Yeah.
Fuck that. That was very dumb. Really. But again, also, that was inappropriate. Like, yes, it was inappropriate. That parent, I think, does a bad job in this case,
right.
But I think that this was icky.
I guess I don't, I'm not familiar with like this statistics around, or like the kind of protocols or best practices or the approach to like, yeah, like transitioning surgery for like teenagers. Like, is that ever done at that age? Or do you think is that too reserved for like post, for like when you're an adult?
Well, I know that the thing that they mostly try to do is puberty blockers. That is the first thing that you're supposed to work with, because in that case, that's always something that can be reversed if it turns out that this younger person goes through therapy and they're not actually trans, there's something else going on or something. Like, the puberty blockers are the first thing. Surgery, I mean, I'm sure this is the whole problem. Like, you know, that's why everyone's mad about England or whatever, wherever the fuck they did this thing recently where it was basically like, don't give any underage person any puberty blockers or anything. Or was that fucking Arizona? Guys, I don't know. There's a lot of bad shit going on in the world. So, you know, it's all dumb and I try to avoid it, but I also am very keenly aware of this shit.
Yeah.
But it's there are things that you can do to delay things, to let somebody be of more sound mind, because let's face it, like, as young people, even if we're not talking about being trans and getting surgery, which is a majorly life-altering thing,
like,
your brain is not developed yet.
About everything.
Yes, like all young people. And I don't mean that a trans person is confused about being trans. That is not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is surgery, even as somebody who is trans, who is terrified of surgery, surgery is a big deal. It is a big deal that it's talked about among grown trans people. There are plenty of trans people out there who might have only had top surgery, not had any surgery at all this stuff.
Yeah.
And it's a big, major decision that I think, like, is, first of all, it should be individual. It shouldn't be a government's decision. Mm-hmm. It should be on an individual basis. But I realize that governments are trying to protect children because there's some fucking whacked out parents out there too, like this dumb lady on Everwood. But like, that's the whole thing, is like, it should be an individual basis. We can hope that everyone will always have the right heart and mindset for these young people trying to work through this shit. But in this case, like, We're not talking about transitional surgery. We're talking about a young girl who's upset that she doesn't have the breasts that she wants.
Yeah.
And let's face it, your body continues to change as a woman, as a man, until you're in your early 20s. You're not fully grown as a human being until your early 20s. Mm-hmm. So that's it. Yes. Like, I don't even know what judgment I'm saying. I'm just saying, like, I think the mother's an idiot and portrayed as an idiot as usual on the show. And then, yes, like, I was like, ooh, that's a really weird choice to make, but also the way Andy went about it is just wrong. So, like, there's a lot of things to say.
Okay.
About
well, that that's helpful. So I will say that, I'm going to say something that's going to kind of spoil something. It would spoil something for the season. So why don't you guys take off your headphones? I'm going to say something.
Okay.
Adam Lawfer, knowing what I know about the appearance of a certain character later in the season, Harold's sister, who is a doctor and I think joins the practice, I really think that they could have saved this storyline for when there was a woman doctor involved. Was that weird? I have no way of knowing because I'm saying this to myself and to you, the non-existent listeners of Ever Would, Never Wouldn't. Just a thought. All right, let's bring back Katie and Eric.
Hi, guys.
So, yeah, it's just some feelings of weirdness around Andy's tone and like just mixed feelings about it.
Is there a trans character later or something?
No. No, that's not the nature of what I was talking about, unfortunately.
That's a bummer.
I wish.
Groundbreaking!
Right? Well, so, yes.
I was hoping McGillicuddy would come back, whatever the fuck his name is. McGilla.
McGilla.
He's my favorite. Still my favorite episode.
It's a great episode. What else we got going on this episode? We've got a guy named...
Oh, never mind. I was just going to... I think it was about a scene we were already done talking about. But if we're done talking about the Bright storyline, can I just say, I'm going to say the first, maybe not the first nice thing I've said about Chris Pratt, but it's kind of a negative thing about Chris Pratt too.
Interesting.
It was one of the times that they were having a conversation. I think it was like one of his maybe last conversations. I think it was the one with his dad. And for like a moment, I was like, wow, Chris Pratt is actually like acting here. Like for the first time I saw him act and be genuine and he seemed so sincere and like sweet. And I was like, oh, I'm actually like enjoying this. And then I was like, it's because he's so goddamn full of his dumb Star-Lord self now.
Yes.
That he's so unlikable. He's so unlikable now.
Yes. I think that Everwood era Chris Pratt is like, best Chris Pratt, like least worst.
He was very like, it was almost like it felt like an audition. It felt like he wasn't sure if he would get the part. Like it was so sweet, and I was like, oh, that's nice. Oh, gross, Chris Pratt.
Yeah. Mm. No, I think that's a solid observation. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Sorry. Let's never talk about Chris Pratt again. I hope he dies. Does he die in this episode? In the episode after this, maybe
we'll see. We've got a guy from Juilliard who shows up named James Geller, played by that
Pete
guy.
Postlethwaite.
Not Pete Postlethwaite. He swore that they thought it was Pete Postlethwaite.
It really is not.
It is an actor named Eric Avari. He's a character actor. He's in a lot of things.
Yeah.
He says to Ephraim, hey, are you Ephraim? Do you play piano? And Ephraim's like, maybe. I don't. I'm studying SAT vocab. And James Geller says, I'm James Geller. The J in James stands for Juilliard. The A stands for admissions. The M stands for matriculation. The E stands for entrance. And the S stands for school. Juilliard admission, matriculation, entrance school. And Ephraim.
Yeah, I missed that.
That's insane. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, this was, me and Everwood, we go way back. Okay. All right. somebody's just jealous.
No, that was awesome. I loved it.
We've got Andy with a whole fucking like oversized academic study calendar for Ephraim. Mm-hmm.
That was so stupid, and I loved it. It was great.
Ridiculous.
It was sweet. Andy's, he's like really getting into being a dad. He's like, I'm a dad. This is what a good dad would do. A little calendar with a little arrows going down. Oh my god.
Yeah, it's cute. And Ephraim's like, no, I'm just gonna do piano, and you know, you didn't have to do any of this before med school. And Andy's like, well, my dad didn't give a shit. My dad was done being a dad when he taught me to swim. And I like Ephraim's line, how do I get on that plan?
Yeah. Yeah. I would have been like, and look at you, the best brain surgeon on the planet. Leave me alone.
Andy says to Stacy, that's her name, right? Stacy Wilson, a chance to correct your decision.
Uh-huh.
Honestly, part of this is the fact that I've been, you know, for months now, you know, helping kind of with research and writing on this, like research study looking at like invitational rhetoric versus traditional kind of persuasion in doctor-patient interactions about vaccinations and stuff. So I'm like, I'm very attuned to like, oh my God, this is not invitational at all. Like this, like just the use of like expertise and authority and like, you know, a chance to correct your decision. Like, ugh.
Yeah.
Rough stuff.
Not knowing anything about her at that point.
Yeah.
Like literally not knowing anything.
Has not asked questions, has not expressed any curiosity about.
Right.
It's just really, it's a real bummer. Also a bummer is that Ephraim apparently sucks at piano. Womp, womp. Mr. Juilliard Admissions Matriculation Entrance School, Geller, explains after Ephraim plays this song, seems reasonably well, he's like, I don't know how much I should disappoint you. Mm-hmm. And he talks about how Ephraim has really...
He was waiting for the bait and switch when he said that.
Yeah.
It's clear, you have the ear. And you bring a genuinely remarkable dynamics and phrasing, but... God, you're a mess of bad habits. Your wrists are stiff, your posture's hollow, you utterly refuse to move your carriage to the music, but that's not what gets me. All that I can stand. You don't sight read very well. I mean, you barely even looked at the music.
I learned it.
Even still, you must always look at the music. The sheet is like a movie you watch 10 times. You may know it by heart, but you find something new in it every time. You've been getting by on that ear and muscle memory, and... It's a problem.
Well, I'm allowed to make a mistake, right? As long as I have the ear and the mechanics.
You need the eye, too. You haven't been putting in your 3 hours a day. You want to be the best lounge player in Denver? That's great. But if you want to get into Juilliard, if you want to sit in the center, command performances, it's all too ordinary, really. It's an unfortunate combination of bad habits, bad teachers that let you get away with it.
Oh, now I know what to work on it through the year, right?
If I wanted to be nice, I would say yes. But I'm afraid too many people have done you a disservice by trying to be nice. Sheet music is like a language, Ephraim. The acquisition's the same. If you're not fluent by the time you're 8, it'll always be a foreign language, always a struggle. But to play concert level, it must be your primary mode of communication. I'm sorry.
This is one scene where we kind of see the episode title at play, because the episode
Extraordinary. Oh,
ordinary.
Yeah, that's right.
And he says to Ephraim, like, it's all too ordinary, you know, like at one point, which I think is kind of shoehorned in. It's kind of an unnatural, like, is he saying that, like,
I think he's saying Ephraim's ordinary.
You're too His ordinary. And these habits, these bad habits, if it's all too ordinary.
I actually really liked the speech he gave about music being a language, because, like, I'm not somebody who can read music. I would love to know, like, Abby's opinion on that. Abby, who is our friend, who knows so much about music and plays every instrument. I thought it was a really cool, like, I never would have thought, like, when you read a piece of music, you find new things every time. That kind of, it was really neat, because it's a language. Just like when you read a book 10 times, you find something new.
That makes total sense.
Really, and if
you only have it learned, like memorized in terms of muscle memory, then you're not engaging with the piece. Mm-hmm. So he makes the point that, like, you have to be fluent in it by like the age of 8 or 10 or whatever, or else you're never going to be fluent in it. And, you know, I think that, that is a bitter pill.
A bitter pill to
swallow there.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's so many people who make really cool things or learn really cool things when they're older. So I was like, shut up.
Yeah, but all those people,
I really liked what he said.
You know, all those people really are just lounge pianists in Denver.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
I hear wonderful things about your women's studies program. Harold says to the Princeton lady.
And that orange sweater vest.
I know! That horrible horrible sweater vest. What was he doing?
I mean, I'm assuming that's Princeton colors. Yeah,
it was, but it was like orange. Is orange Princeton? I thought they were blue and white or something.
I thought it even had a crest on it or whatever.
Yeah, it definitely looked like a college something. I thought maybe it was his own college. Princeton colors. I'm looking that up.
Yeah, orange and black. Princeton orange and black.
Okay.
Good costume Princeton design. Princeton is like
the college that was near me when I was growing up. I was just about to look and see
how far away it was from where you lived.
No, not where I, well, where when I lived, I was further away, but closer to my school.
Amy never shows up for this meeting with the Princeton admissions person.
Jerk.
That was
I felt so uncomfortable for all of them.
Yeah. I couldn't believe that. I was like, wow, what the fuck? This is real. I mean, I guess they were really just showing how fucked up she is, but man, not even showing up, like not even being like, hi, it's nice to meet you. Goodbye. Like, I'm not interested.
Does she never even explain, like, she doesn't offer an excuse.
Where she was?
I like to think that she was just upstairs watching TV.
And they wouldn't go get her.
They're just like, well.
What do we do?
What do we do?
Yeah.
At dinner's tense, they talk about how, you know, well, we all do our part. Like, we go to work. Bright goes to football practice. A little shot of Bright being like, yeah.
We got another shot of Dr. Abbott with his napkin over his orange sweater vest. Oh,
love it. The Dr. Abbott napkin. Rose is very, very concerned about Amy. She says, you don't seem to be showing the slightest concern about your future. And Amy's like, well, I don't.
Yeah,
I'm grieving, mother. And Rose.
Wow, that's a good impression.
Thank you. And Rose says, "You've had all summer to grieve. Why don't you go up to your bed and throw that TV out the window and hope it lands on a living boyfriend?
And he can go into a coma, and then we can start it all over again."
Yes, it's a great scene. If you don't believe me, you should go back and watch it, everybody.
I really wish it was more like that. My rating for watching would have been way higher than it's gonna be.
It was suddenly a Noel Coward play. Rose is angry at Harold for not having a united front, because Harold's like, you know, let her go. We're angry. She knows that that's enough. Rose is like, we need a united front. And Harold is, you know, sounded like me. He's like, Rose, she's grieving.
Yep.
Well, he says she's hurting. And Rose is like, I know she's hurting. I'm the mayor. I have a magical ability to know when anybody in this town is hurting. That's what the mayor of Everwood does. Ever since the magical mayoral pact of 1933. And Harold says, shh, Rose, my wife. You mustn't speak so loudly about the secrets of our town. And Rose is chastened. End of scene.
Exeunt.
Exeunt.
Chased by Bright.
I was going to say the exact same thing. I said chased by a Bright. Oh, fuck.
To look at you, I guess you don't have the slightest concern about your future.
Well, I don't. Let me down here, please.
Absolutely.
Rose. Yes. Go ahead.
Now, hold on. I know this is hard. I do. But you can't just forget about everything that was important to you.
Rose. We don't have to do this now. Go on.
Excuse me?
We're angry. She knows it. That's enough.
That is hardly enough. It was a united front that got us this far with them, Harold. If we intend to get anywhere with her now...
There's nowhere to go, Rose. Not now. Can't you see she's hurting? With good reason. I can't punish that.
Well, we don't have to punish it. But I cannot let her continue in this void. Of course, I can see she's hurting. She doesn't eat, Harold. She's up half the night with the TV on. It's not normal.
She's not supposed to be normal. You know, Amy's not just grieving for Colin. She's grieving for the life that she wanted and expected. I met you when I was Colin's age. And now the rest of her life is like a second choice.
She's becoming someone I don't even recognize. I miss her. I miss her life. All I have now are eggshells everywhere and this fear that I'll say something wrong to remind her. Am I really supposed to just do nothing?
Yes, you are. Be thankful that you have the easier job.
Those actors are good in that scene, but that scene felt out of place to me. Like,
you want to know why?
It didn't feel like Everwood to me.
It didn't feel like Everwood because I thought the role should have been reversed. I'm used to Harold being the one that is reactionary and like having to go, oh, but they made the wife like just like, hey, I don't under, you know, like, why aren't we pushing this?
Well,
like, Harold's the pusher.
I think she's not usually
the one that does that.
I think they had to do it because then both, like, she is impatient with Amy. And he's impatient with Bright. And I think I think it makes sense for those relationships because Harold has a closer relationship with Amy.
Right. And it just didn't feel, it felt like, it, for me, that was, I was watching it. And I'm like, why is it like this? This feels like something that Harold has already done with one or both of his children. And like, she seems like she's always the one with a more level head. I don't know. It just felt opposite.
Yeah, sure. But I like the resulting kind of contrast of like getting to see, especially with Harold, getting to see him like be totally aware of like what's going on with Amy and just be like, we don't have to do this now. Like, there's no reason to. She's hurting. And then be completely unself-aware in his interaction with Bright. And like, just completely like losing self-control, not catching himself. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
Stacy and her mother go to see Harold for a second opinion about her boobs.
He's like, good job. They look pretty good.
Good boobs. Good boobs. Me, Harold. You boobs.
This is the best episode of Everwood I've ever seen. It was really weird and great. And
they're really pushing the whole, like, yeah, I mean, like, which makes sense, right? Like, the whole narrative of like townspeople being like, oh, Andy killed a little boy who came in for brain surgery. And so Stacy's like, I'm lucky I came out of that doctor's office alive, I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
Harold's like,
none of these people in this town have ever experienced anyone else dying.
Right.
Because if Dr. Abbott had treated anyone and they ever died, they would have blamed
him. I feel like I've given away too much with my seemingly joking impersonations of the characters and, you know, the secrets of Everwood. They've never experienced death before Colin.
Oh my God. Vampire town, vampire town, town full of vampires.
Okay.
Is this our new segment?
Yeah. Oh, hello. I am Dr. Abbott. Here to vampire Dr. Abbott. Hello. I wear an ascot because I like it. It's like having a napkin coming out of my collar at all times. Oh, bro.
I wear it to catch the blood. So Vampire Town is a new segment where we look for anything at all in every episode suggesting that this is actually secretly a show about vampires.
I'm writing it down and I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
Secretly a show about vampires. Okay.
Vampire Town. Yep.
All right. It's going to happen. Vampire Town.
Speaking of segments, tonight's episode of Everwood is brought to you by Turkey Jerky.
I knew it. I wrote it down.
Does anyone really need that much Turkey Jerky? Yes. Yes, you do.
Yay.
Harold is mad that they've come to him for a second opinion about something that is so obvious to him. He yells after her, good luck with your breasts.
Is that what he was mad about? Yeah, is that what it was? I actually couldn't interpret why he was mad.
It didn't quite coalesce.
Even when he was talking to Andy later, I wasn't sure.
What was Dr. Brown's assessment, if you don't mind my asking?
He said that getting it replaced probably wasn't the best idea.
Like after $7,000 and a week of drainage tubes, I'm going to take him out and use him as a paperweight? I don't know why I went to Dr. Brown in the first place. I'm lucky I came out alive.
And I assume you let him know how you feel.
I didn't tell him anything he didn't already know.
He suggested we get a second opinion.
I see. Well, I'm afraid I can't offer you one.
You don't have an opinion?
None. None whatsoever. No opinions here. Fresh out. Tabula rasa.
Wait, doctor, it wasn't exactly easy to get her to come in.
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't. Good day, and good luck with your breast. Yeah. Generally, I'm thrilled to take in refugees from your inferior medicine. Truth be told, I'm surprised patients don't flee across the street from your office more often. But when you give them good reason to run, you take all the fun out of it. I just met with your patient, the adolescent implant case.
I needed a second opinion from someone who wasn't a plastic surgeon. Should I not send people your way?
Well, I expect a minimum of discretion. Any idiot would know that that girl has no business getting more plastic surgery. She should have never gotten any in the first place.
It became very clear very quickly that she didn't want to hear that from me.
And since when does that stop you? Ever since you moved here, all you've done is make people listen to you. You're Andy Brown. You meddle. You push. You enmesh and embroil. Irritate till you get your way. You're like pestilence.
Look, if they don't trust me, if they look at me and all they see is Colin Hart's memorial photo in the yearbook, there's not much I can do about it.
Well, you're not going to win their trust back by sending anything more complicated than a bagel wound to me. Forgive my saying so, but this whole attempt at rule-abiding good behavior makes you painfully ordinary, and quite frankly, you have no talent for it.
You know, that ring takes all the authority out of everything you just said.
He is, like, offended that they're coming to him over something that's so obvious. Like, mm-hmm. like you were right about this. And so the fact that they would like come to me, like when you were already right about it, like there are so many flaws about you as a person and as a doctor that there's like, yes, I'll be happy to take patients who leave you for the right reason, but this is a wrong reason. So just fucking like,
but why is it a wrong? Wait, that's,
I think it's
to me,
from
it
a place
seem...
of like, he cares about him.
But
like
it doesn't seem believable that no other people have ever gone to him for any second opinions for stupid things or not.
Well, so
like, I really was confused
so
by that.
That is the kind of like surface level. I think a part of it, I think Eric's right that it is like a kind of caring about Andy, because the turning point in the scene in his office is when she says like, well, I'm lucky I came out alive. And there's this look on Harold's face of like, excuse me, like he doesn't say excuse me, but he's like, oh, and you said that to Andy, to Dr. Brown. And I think that's when he closes the folder. He's like, you know what, no second opinion. And then he pushes Andy to, like, you know,
and he shouts about her boob out the door. And I was
good,
like,
luck with your breast.
Good luck with your breast.
But he doesn't say breast door. Implant.
Yes, but he said that doesn't get out. Adam, you would be a terrible lawyer.
He doesn't say breast implant. He doesn't say anything about what is wrong with the breast. That would be like a doctor saying, good luck with your body. Like, well, yes, that's not against HIPAA to acknowledge the existence of the body.
Right, but the fact that he's talking about a specific breast, I don't know.
But he doesn't
Adam.
Say which one. He doesn't say left breast or right breast.
He might even be talking about like the food she's going to be preparing later that night.
Oh, that's way better. I hope all the patients are sitting there going like, ooh, he's just like talking about
the
movie.
I'm just
like,
quoting the story arc later on in the first half of the season is him getting sued. And his argument in court is, I didn't say which one.
Yeah.
Oh, perfect. God.
This is the best show I've ever seen in my
Andy's
life.
Andy's smile at Dr. Abbott through the car window is very good.
That's the, that is the first gifable moment that I wrote down.
Are
of
both
episode.
Of the gifable moments Andy behind glass?
Yes, they are. You called it.
Andy, this is the best episode for Andy and Windows.
Trubus doesn't know what glass is. And so whenever there's an invisible barrier, he's so excited and happy every time.
It's magic.
Whoa! It's one of these clear things. I can't go through it. Oh my goodness. What's happening? Look at this. Check it out.
So yeah, Andy like has the curiosity and like wonder of a baby in every area of his life except for talking to teen girls about their breast implants.
That's
when he's like, I'm a grown up.
Baby needs real boob for real milk to come out of.
That's
why he was very
boob.
Upset.
This isn't stew. This is soup.
Oh my God! What's happening?
We're making what we can
Holy
of this episode.
Yeah, that's, so
that's what's
true.
Happening.
Oh my goodness.
Oh my God.
We have no respect for this episode at all.
We really don't.
And Harold, then we get another use of he says that Andy's reasoning for like giving up with his patient, it makes him seem painfully ordinary. So another reference to the episode title. His ringtone is it Hot Cross Buns? Wait, what was that?
It was
what
really
was it? It
silly.
Was...
Dun, dun, dun. Wait, that's too slow, right?
No, it wasn't Hot Cross Buns. Ugh, now I can't remember.
Because I shouldn't have said Hot Cross Buns.
Well, Hot Cross Buns is also Three Blind Mice, right?
Yeah.
Oh, no,
not
it's
that,
similar.
Though. It was some sort of a.
It was like a nursery
little,
rhyme
kind
of.
Yeah, in that realm.
Bop.
But whatever it was, Andy observes that it takes away all of the authority
out
of what Harold had just said.
Yeah.
It's at that point that Harold and Rose, they find out about that Bright was kicked off the team.
So, do you even want to go to college?
Harold,
let me finish. Do you? All right, it's my job as your parent not to let your personality stand in the way of your success. So you will do whatever you have to do to get back on that team. You want to be mad at me about it? Fine. Let this be my fault. Blame me. Be mad at me the whole time that you are in the college of your choice.
If the only way that I can get into college is by guilting somebody, then I shouldn't get in. And I won't go that way.
So how will you go then, huh? You know, this isn't petty rebellion time. This isn't some cute wing-stretching opportunity. This is your future, Bright. You need a football scholarship. How do you plan to get to college without football?
I'll work my ass off. I'll study harder. I'll work harder. You always push me to play. You don't push me to work. Maybe I'll be good at it. It's not like we're hurting so much for tuition I can't get into school without a scholarship.
It's not the money. They won't accept you without football.
Why? Why not?
Because you're not smart enough. I didn't mean.
And this scene explodes into the climactic moment of Harold saying, "You're not smart enough to get into college, not on athletic scholarship." But it's a yikes moment. It's like yikes. It's like eek. It's like oof. It's like oh boy.
I wanted to quit the call right there. But...
when it started infecting me? Is that one that worked?
Yeah, it was for your safety.
All right. I've got written here stew arrow soup dash SAT prep. Okay.
Stew soup SAT prep.
My technique is ass and it's too late. My technique is ass.
Yeah. I thought that was interesting.
That's
kind
of hot, right?
It's ass, white man.
We totally didn't acknowledge that whole thing.
We talked about it too much while we were watching.
Yeah, we
paused
it
when white man, he says to Andy.
We none of us had any idea what that was.
We had
to
Google it. Apparently, it's a Lone Ranger reference.
Yeah.
Tonto. So I guess it's not racist. Probably still is.
Did we end up? We talked about the Fat Man and the Everwood Show, right?
The big fat
the
man.
The song. That is so.
Me of
I need to
when
like.
We were watching that.
I need to screenshot that.
Yeah, for sure.
Each episode's going to have a weird thing that we notice more in the subtitles than anything else.
Send me an email right now, please, saying to screenshot those subtitles, because I need to tweet from the Everwood Pod. You can follow us, everybody, on Everwood Pod on Twitter, and you will see eventually when this is released in 2023. You can go back and see that I tweeted a screenshot of these subtitles from season 2, episode 1. You're not smart enough. My technique is ass. Harold and Dandy are miserable at the diner.
Oh my God, that was my favorite.
Great, great beat of silence. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Abbott's hair was all rumbled. It's tussled, yeah. Oh my God.
I think that's the longest we've ever gone without an insult.
Today is a special day for all.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I'm seeing Stacy Wilson again today. Seems like I've had this day before.
Do yourself a favor. If I offer any more unsolicited advice on that subject or any other, do the opposite.
Wow. I've never heard you admit that you were wrong preemptively before. Matter of fact, I've never heard you admit that you were wrong.
Is, I'm sure, a feeling I'll get used to. You have experience having a son who hates you with good reason. Is there anything I should be doing? Or is it all just pretty much shouting and regret?
How bad was it? My fight with Ephraim yesterday was about a 5, maybe a 6.
9.5, easy.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't suppose there's any way out.
Well, I find that contrition works pretty well. You know, you just keep telling them what an idiot you are. They like that.
Mm.
But 9.5.
Harold's like easily a 9.5.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Yep. Yeah, I can't remember Dr. Brown doing anything that bad with Ephraim, at least in the that we've witnessed.
He yelled that he hated him in the middle of the street.
No, sometimes I hate you too, you little bastard.
Yeah, something.
And also like, shit. Well, I wish I had died too. And also, sometimes I hate you too. I hate you right back, you little bastard. Now get inside that house. And then there's the episode, apparently that scene where we learned about Julia's cheating on Andy, and like, you know, I remember in the commentary Treat Williams being like, we got physical on some of those takes, like shoving, which I still think is pretty kind of cool. I mean, I don't think that would have been appropriate, but I think it informed the take that they did go with. But anyway, I don't think Andy's ever gotten to a 9.5.
no.
Good job, Andy. You're just a girl who decided, you woke up one day and decided to buy a woman's body. I don't know.
We're going back to that.
I'm just I'm going in order. Yeah.
Right. Like that was not a time where there were as many trans people in the public eye. Nobody would have ever taken that from that.
Right. When, like, honestly, and it's just more like, I wasn't sure if there's been like any kind of shift in terms of respecting the autonomy and decisions of teenagers.
Minors.
And their relationships with their bodies. So it just kind of gets into like some tricky territory for me, and a territory that I don't think that they were anticipating, like, that maybe coming to mind in 2021 for people watching.
A 17-year-old making that decision about her body, that's a big decision.
Yeah.
And she's not trans. And like, it's different.
So I guess
it's different.
So I guess the problem is just the problem is still his tone.
Yes, absolutely.
This is not the way to go about having those conversations.
Yeah, no. No.
So judgmental, so paternalistic. It's just, Harold and Bright explaining, like, look, we don't talk about academic stuff, you know, pointing out, like, you've always done that with Amy. You've never checked in on me with school. And, you know, it's kind of nice, I guess, seeing the character, you know, want to work hard and improve his grades.
Go along with that, idiot.
You can see Harold even thinking that, like, in the midst of, like, kindness and pity, like, oh, Bright, I want to say you're dumb again, but I know that that's bad.
I've learned that that's not so great to say.
We get our second gif-able window moment. Andy shows up at the school during Ephraim's SAT prep class and just comes right up to the full wall window and just like waves and knocks and like with this big grin on his face. It is so funny.
Yes.
But also like, could that even happen today?
No, not today. No.
Mm-mm. What do you mean? Like him?
But schools have way more
security regulation. And shit,
depends
right?
on the campus and stuff. Like a lot of schools are just like you can't get into the school.
Right.
He probably tried getting inside, couldn't. So he walked around. It would be funny if he had like a little ID. Like I checked into the office, but I've come to the window. I've walked back outside around the building. Anyway, really funny moment. What an interesting kind of directing choice. Like, because like they could have just had him come to the classroom, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Through the regular door, but that wouldn't be as interesting or as funny.
I think it was just like he was just like excited about like his choice and like what he's doing for his son and what he's done on his end.
You know, the most unrealistic part about it though was that like so he left right and then they were just gonna leave and I'm like, you mean to say that he doesn't have a bag or anything? Did he have a backpack? He didn't, right? I'm pretty sure he just left and he just like didn't take any of his stuff and then they just left.
Ephraim.
Yeah.
He doesn't need that stuff anymore.
He doesn't need school stuff anymore. It's just piano.
Even if he did have a backpack, it would just be full of manga or some shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
But I bet he ran out of manga because he kept on taking it to school and Bright kept on ripping it in half.
Oh, wow. That takes me back. Yeah. That's like episode two of the last season.
The pilot. Is it the first one? Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Oh, man. Andy has a little revelation. He says, I saw the passion that you were talking about when you said that, like, this guy said that you were bad at piano or whatever. It was, you were angry because someone tried to take your music away. So I thought he was taking Ephraim to like go meet a new piano teacher or something, but I guess it was just like, I'm going to get you out of school at a SAT prep class so you can practice at home.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
fun.
Yeah.
Rose has a little scene with Amy. This is when the turkey jerky infomercial happens on Amy's TV. Kind of like some of Rose's lines in this scene.
Yeah.
Aren't you angry? Don't you want to get mad? Yell a little? Do something? We used to fight. We were good at it. Do you remember when I tried to take the phone out of your room? You had a hissy fit all night till I changed my mind? I said you were tying up the line, and you said, well, that's not fair, or something childish, and I said something childish back to you, and then we went at it back and forth like hyenas for about an hour. We were absolute brats, both of us. It was so much fun. You're not doing well, you know that.
I guess.
Do you want to talk to me about it?
Not really.
Would you at least talk to someone?
Like a therapist?
Like anyone you think might help.
Okay.
We were absolute brats, both of us. It was so much fun. Like, Rose misses that, like, mother-daughter arguing. And now it's just like, Amy's too depressed to argue.
Yep.
What a bummer.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Fucking Amy. Still a drag.
What a drag. And we end with some Irv narration. It's hard to tell what's extraordinary. But when you see it, you know what it is. It flushes you down the toilet. It holds your breath for you with your head in the toilet.
Wow.
Weird narration. A lot of toilet references.
I didn't hear it.
Yeah, you don't hear it. And Ephraim is practicing at 7 a.m. on a Saturday, prompting Delia to remark, "I'm glad I'm not a genius. I can sleep till noon."
Mm-hmm. Typical.
Which is, I think, I find that offensive.
To
pianos.
To pianos, to geniuses, to beds, to clocks, to little girls. Everybody involved.
What's everybody doing today?
This might be my least favorite episode of Everwood, but easily my top five episodes of Everwood, Never Wouldn't.
Yes, yes.
Are we going to do treat tweets?
Oh!
Let's do that as like a palate cleanser after our ratings.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
But before ratings, I think, also comes... Are you going to Juilliard? Parsley,
like you
sage, rosemary, TV time. This is the segment where I open TV time on my phone and read all of the comments that people left on this particular episode. 4 years ago, TV Time user Mad wrote...
We've seen them before.
Bright, not so bright. Give that a like.
Oh my goodness.
3 years ago, TV Time user Naturelle Bella wrote, "Look how young Kristen Bell looks. Glad to see how far guest stars in the show have come."
Wait, what?
Sure.
Oh, okay. Those are two separate thoughts. Okay. Yes. Now I understand.
I mean, it's really how far they've come is that she's gotten older. TV Time user The Fandom Lounge is back.
Oh.
2 years ago wrote, "Oof, bright is just really too good for words. Love, sun emoji." Yeah, okay.
Get out of here, Fandom Lounge.
More like the Pratt Dumb Lounge. And
it is more like that.
And 2 years ago, TV Times stalwart Mary VP wrote, "Poor Bright. He may not be super smart, but he has such a good heart." Heart emoji. "Sweet and humble." Fuck you. He's not sweet and humble. He's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
And
shallow.
And dumb. Thanks and shallow. God. And thanks to, thanks to God. Thanks a lot, God. Why do I have to love boobs so much? This has been Parsley, Sage, Rosemary TV Time.
Yay.
Which brings us to ratings. In anticipation, I would give this a 4. Just because we are pretty we are now kind of into territory where I'm not remembering as much, which I could be more excited about, but I'm a bit more uneasy.
There must be a reason.
Yeah,
I was just like, I'm not sure anymore.
Aww.
And because yes, I think I'm more likely to be excited to see episodes that I remember. And they're like, "Oh yeah, I remember liking that one." But yeah, so we'll see. Or maybe I'm just in a weird mood this week. Mm-hmm. But it was a 4 anticipation. While watching, I think a 3. Just because it's it's not. There was a lot of distracting stuff with Andy with the breast implant storyline that really was just tough for me. And then it's just so much rooted in the teenage character storylines, which they're not the ones that I really stuck around for in terms of watching the show. So a 3 while watching. In hindsight, in retrospect, I had so much fun recording this and discovering that it might be secretly a show about vampires.
Yeah.
And that there are these alter egos of these characters in the subtext of what they're saying that are kind of saying these lines in a more kind of 1940s kind of style, theatrical mm-hmm. presentational style. So that, mm-hmm. I mean, that is really intriguing to me, and I can't wait to see where the show goes with that. So easily 5 stars in retrospect.
You want to go next?
All right. In anticipation, I'm going to give it a 5 because I am always excited to watch Everwood. And it's always a nice distraction from everything. During, I'm going to give it, yeah, like around a 3, I think. Like the thought I had a couple times, like in some of the scenes, like it, for some reason, felt almost like a soap opera to me at some points. Like, I don't know. And then afterwards, a 5, because you predicted my second gif-able moment. That was yeah. fun.
And those window moments, like, might be, like, I mean... mm-hmm. It almost makes me want to say, like, that while watching it was a 4, but I already did my rank. Like, they're so good. But really, that's they wonderful. Just slot into what bumped it up to a 5, I think, for me.
Right, exactly.
Andy, more Andy and window scenes, please. Mm-hmm. I love when Andy interacts with Harold, but
yep.
Andy and windows is really mm-hmm. where it's at, I think.
Well, there was a handy window Harold scene.
I like that they were originally in the season one finale going to have Andy come up to a window, like between him and like the waiting mm-hmm. room.
Oh yeah.
Like I think that they were like having a hankering even then to to find some fun moments.
Do you think that's on Treat's resume? Like, can interact with glass in a
can really act behind glass. Funny...
yeah, yeah.
Can act behind can and be... through glass.
mm-hmm.
Yeah,
like it's like juggling. It's one of the special skills.
Glass on command.
Is it my turn?
Yep.
Did you finish yours?
Yeah, I did.
Okay, guys, you're gonna be Adam's gonna be sad, but okay. So like in anticipation, 5. I love watching Everwood. Watching, I'm gonna give it a 2. It got that low because at first it was great, but then like really very quickly it was. Well, we were all laughing and having a good time at first. I was like, wow, this is weird, funny. I'm having a good time, like it. And then it slid so hard down because of the fucking boob stuff. And the way that Andy talked, it was like yeah. season one, episode one, Andy. What the fuck is going on there, right?
Welcome to the human race, Dr. Brown.
No, like mm-hmm. more baby, more likey boobies, not less likey, I don't know, whatever the fuck. He just was so obnoxious. And then like throughout, again, the high school shit I don't care about. Like, man, I want more grown-up stuff. And then afterwards, like, this is hard because the conversation is 5, but just looking at the episode, though, like, just not a good episode. So, like, 3?
You're, like, treating the third rating like the way it should be. Because I right. rated, I was like, I give a 5, yeah. this episode of Everwood never would.
Right, pretty yeah. much.
I think I've done that before, but then Eric used to criticize. Oh, no. Mine was because it was predicting yes. the next one.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
No, that's
this
fine.
Fucking rating system. I break it all the time.
It's ridiculous. No, I totally.
But the conversation, of course, 5. Like, I mean, I should just add like a 5.
I will say, at the first, like, 5. Maybe 10 minutes of the recording.
Yeah.
It was a little iffy.
Yeah, we were like, what are we going to talk about? What is this episode? Luckily, yeah. there are vampires.
Well,
so.
100%. So that's a 4-3-5 from me, a 5-3-5 from Eric, and a 5-2-3 from KT. Yeah. This is now time for our new segment, Treat Tweets. No, you guys have to do. You guys do.
Oh,
the,
what do we tweet, have to do? Something.
Tweet, tweet,
tweet,
yeah, you do
tweet,
the
tweet,
words.
Tweet, 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 tweet. All right,
let's dig it again, and I could do my like my vocals a bit better. So,
okay.
Which brings us to our next segment, Treat Tweets.
tweet, 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 tweet.
Both of you do it, I think.
No, I didn't do it last time.
All right, so it's me, KT, and then Eric is the one who reads the tweets.
All right, I'm not reading the tweets. I'm just this from memory.
Wow.
Okay.
From memory.
Yeah, I don't just go read them. It was I will say it was a very light week.
Is that a jab at me pulling up TV Time and reading the comments?
No.
You're like, I'm going to open Twitter and read all the tweets.
I am just pointing out that I follow tweet through the week. And I absorb it, and it's just, all right. My impression. And it was a very light week in terms of treat tweets.
Mm-hmm.
He's, if you recall from last week's session, he has traveled to Vancouver, I think, somewhere in Canada around up there, for the filming of Chesapeake Shores. I think it's season 5, his Hallmark show. He's posted a couple shots and videos of the beautiful area where he's staying with his rocky shore and mountains in the distance. I'd say the most notable thing is he posted a picture of a fireplace, and he had some papers, and I think they were like his script or his lines or whatever. There was nothing visible or whatever, and
he had no lines. No treat lines.
The tweet was something about getting getting back into it, but feeling a bit rusty.
Aww.
And then in some of like the replies, it was like he said something about the acting is easy, it's the learning that's hard.
Yeah.
So just a little callback to treat from 20 years ago, having trouble memorizing lines. Apparently that's
only gotten harder, I imagine. poor treat.
But he's up there in Canada.
Yeah, he's living such a good life.
He had to spend Easter away from his family.
Aww. Whatever.
Well, happy belated Easter to you, Treat William.
Yep. And that's this week in Treats Tweets.
This has been Treats Tweets.
Tweet, 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 tweet.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to need more.
I seem to have remembered a guitar, though.
No.
Was it because we were picturing that under yours?
Yeah.
Was it only me?
It's under me. And then, like, you need to do, like, a lot more tweets and have them be kind of more. Like, you're doing, like, 6 tweets. You need to do, like, 14 or 15 tweets and have them just kind of come out, like, I didn't do it right, but you'll get it next
time. I'll take that direction.
Take the note.
Well, now time for
next to vampires.
Time for predictions.
Oh.
Next week's episode, season 2, episode 3, is called My Brother's Keeper.
Okay, who do we know has brothers?
Oh, sorry. I left out a word. It's My Brother's Trapper Keeper.
Oh, wow. Cool. With my Lisa Frank folders inside.
So is this episode about someone from England who comes to visit and their sibling is a soccer goalie?
Is that a reference to something? Oh, Trapper. Oh, fuck you.
What?
Fuck Trapper. You, Eric. Is that a...
No.
Keeper.
I thought that
keeper.
I thought that in England the goalies are called trappers. Well, no, it's not
maybe
about
it's
that.
About Trapper John.
Okay.
Who are the brothers in this? We got Bright. We got Ephraim.
Uh huh.
What are other brothers we know?
The hermit guy in the woods, they're brothers.
Yeah, they're done.
Well, that guy showed up.
Does Harold or Andy have a brother? I'm hoping that it's a grown up storyline. God damn it.
I don't think we've heard about any of them having brothers.
Somebody has a sister. I think Harold has a sister.
I will say that this has everything to do with what I had you guys hop off your headphones for.
What was that relating to? Boobs? Boob surgery? Andy's attitude about being a doctor and boob jobs and being underage and his being a bad doctor. Brother. Does he have a brother? Did his wife have a brother? What do we know about brothers? It's please let it be an adult thing!
Is it like about...
Not Bright!
Is it like a friar?
Like a deep friar?
No, like as opposed to a nun.
Eric, not everything is puns. Not all the time.
Or is it like, oh, brother?
Oh my God. Is it about beekeepers?
You actually, you have already, at one point you said what it's in reference to. You got it right.
Okay.
I just want to say about what it was.
A goalie.
It's about the goalie.
Yeah.
Got it. Or Trapper John. It's Trapper John.
His keeper. My brother's keeper. Because it has to be.
There's a soccer game and there's a goal and the announcer yells out, Colin Hart is dead.
What? Why?
I was just trying to think of something that was sounded like goal.
Oh. Well, yeah, Colin is Lainey's brother. He's dead.
My brother's keeper. I still don't want it to be about kids,
though. It's not that. It's something that you had already said prior to that. But we can't waste time on this shit.
No. We have more to do.
That we don't have more to do. We just that's it. This has been ever. Did you stop recording?
No.
I mean, I wish. Could. This has been Everwood Never Wouldn't. It's a podcast. I don't know who I'm even talking to.
I don't know. It's at the end of the podcast you're describing what we just did. It's a podcast in which I...
Eric!
Oh my God. It's at the end when I'm saying goodbye to our listeners that I just... It starts to feel like we're in a post-apocalyptic world. Just kind of radioing out and just feeling like just nobody's unsure listening. That this might be it. Like that is how I feel.
Yep.
At these moments.
Here's the 3,270th installment of the Free World Radio.
Oh my goodness.
To anyone listening.
Now I want let's all right. Stop recording this. Let's eventually turn the Everwood Never Wouldn't into a podcast that is being recorded after the end of the world
in a bunch.
So like we just a reference like the recorder like picks up us talking about like that.
Do you remember what happened?
Do you remember the before times? All right, everybody, getting into season 3 of Everwood. Shh, wait, I heard something. It's one of the monsters.
It's one of the abovers.
The abovers. All right. Well, I'll end this. I'll put us out of our misery with a little rendition of a song that I like to call Everwood theme song. Are you guys going to sing along?
Yeah.
I think we have to, right?
Do you want me to hear you?
It's funny with his headset. I don't think we're cutting him off.
Yeah, I think the headset is all right. Does well, here work we better,
but
yeah.
We're gonna be.
We'll be all out of sync.
It's fine. I'll just try to focus on myself. Okay. I'm so not used to that. And a one, and a two, and a one, two, three, four.
Are we doing it fast?